Welcome to the Freemasons Podcast, coming to you live from Morningstar Lodge number 47. Leave your aprons at the door, my brothers.
Hello and welcome to the Freemasons Podcast with your hosts, Right Worshipful Brother George Mudry.
Worshipful Brother Joe.
Worshipful Brother Ken.
And with us tonight, Right Worshipful Shane Dufresne of the Grand Lodge of the State of Connecticut, the Grand Senior Steward, also known as our podcast handler.
Thank you, brother.
I have to commend you. You've done a hell of a job over the last year or so.
Thank you.
Depends who you ask.
Have you listened to the first 10 episodes?
It's a running joke. Right Worshipful Shane is not our podcast handler, but in the beginning, he counseled us as to what...
He whispered good counsel.
He did whisper good counsel.
Very loudly.
Some of us adhered to some of it. We did adhere to it. We listened, right?
By we, if you mean Ken and I.
I have been, yeah.
By you, not so much.
I do listen.
You listen, but you don't apply.
I do apply.
No, you don't.
Red Sox, better not take him to Jimmy's. Actually, Jimmy's downstairs is a Red Sox bar. It used to be a Yankees bar, and then
they smarten up
when the owner came back, and the particular guy who was renting Jimmy's before it was Jimmy's, when the owner came back, he said, "Get all this shit off my walls."
Yep,
and he threw it all away. So
now it's a Sox bar.
Downstairs is a Red Sox bar, without a doubt. So anyway, we're gonna do some quick housekeeping first, and then we'll get right into it. Joe,
working on it.
Ken,
I'm working on it too.
I'm here.
For those who like to write on YouTube and slap Bible verses, I can do the same thing too.
Yeah, so I saw that.
Can you please not do that? Thank you. Yeah. I'm not a devil worshiper.
We also read the Bible.
we read it. We might actually know it better than most people. And you know, I love how they like to pick and choose certain things to make them look all righteous, but then they tend to ignore the things that make them not look so good.
Yeah. But sometimes.
Anyway, I'm ready for the likes.
Fire.
All right. We're going to go with I.J. Purino, Wes Johnson, Thomas Wood III, Adam Schrantz, Harry Hickman III, George K.
Go on.
Sound it out.
Kalitides. It's definitely Greek.
Yeah.
Kollitides. So there's like...
I love watching you sweat, by the way.
Well, it's chlamydides. I wanted to say something else with the combination of chlamydia, but I didn't want to do that out loud on the show, so I won't.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Scott Pinella. No relation to Lou.
Over on Instagram, we got Bradley Craig, Bill Southam, Eli Dardis, Justin Van Horn, Chris Britland, MelBaby95, Kevin Emery, Chrome Dick.
What the hell?
I'm sure that's his name. It's just, okay. David Alexander, thank you, brothers and friends.
Did you see that Alfred Hitchcock thing I posted on Discord today?
Yeah,
it took me a while to figure out what that was, too. I was like,
on YouTube, we have Damien Vation, Dave Freeman, Farmer Stillness, and Kevin Emery. And there was, I think that's all I got. So let's lead a toast.
I do have to admit, I got super excited.
You did do it,
Ken. Right. It's your birthday.
I got super excited. I thought Ken was going to say Bradley Cooper liked the show, but no. Clearly not the case.
All right, you guys ready?
Ready.
Ready.
Right hand to arms.
To arms.
Ready.
Ready.
Aim.
Aim.
Fire. Good fire. Fire all. Together, brothers.
Vivat, vivat, vivat.
Right, Worshipful Shane, you did a good job. It's like you've seen it before.
Yeah, I might have done it once or twice, or several.
He's been here.
Been there, done that.
All right, I gave you the itinerary.
Yes.
Not that I do that for every guest, but I figured being that, you know, you could pretty much have my deuce card pulled. No. I think it would be nice to do. No, you can't have my deuce card pulled, but he could try, though.
Special guest. He knows people that can
have He knows people.
He could still take it away from you.
And that's our third district representative.
Yeah, and realistically, I mean, if you think of the Mafia, you don't fuck with the underboss, right? You never mess around with the underboss.
Right. Yeah,
Johnny was worse than Castellano, just throwing it out there.
And technically, you know, as a Grand Lodge officer representing District 3, technically he's kind of like in my boss by like a dotted line kind of way, so I got to be on my best behavior.
Some type of weird matrix.
Some kind of weird thing, yeah. You're on the chart. You're on the chart.
I'm on the
chart. All right, let's get started up. Ray Washville, what got you involved in Freemasonry? What turned you on to it? What?
What'd you do?
What'd I touch? Like Jeff Goldblum in the Jurassic Park vehicle. Yeah. What did I touch?
You look more like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly.
So what got me into Freemasonry? Yes. Freemasonry was first introduced to me by a coworker back in early 2000s, and myself and another brother caught him practicing his ritual because he was a line officer. So we asked him about it, and he told us about it, and he didn't give us too much information, and kind of piqued our interest a little bit, and I got into it because of the historical aspect. There's no Freemasons in my family that I've ever been made aware of. I didn't do any internet research on it. I just when I found out the historical connection with all the presidents and all the people who have done good for our country, I'm like, I want to be a part of that. So.
Question for you. This is coming from Greg Schultz, Worship Brother. Are Connecticut Grand Lodge officers below Junior Grand Warden appointed or elected? Delaware Grand Lodge officers are appointed and pass and PM or Worshipful Brothers. Are all Connecticut Grand Lodge officers Right Worshipful Brothers except Grand Master?
All right, so
it's a lot of questions.
There's a lot there.
It's a lot in there. So break it down.
I guess he's asking if is below the Junior the Grand Junior Warden. He calls it Junior Grand Warden, but the Grand Junior Warden. They're appointed.
We're appointed.
Appointed. Successive line for the most part. I mean, unless you really suck, you're getting.
We've had some hiccups in the road. We unfortunately had a brother that was in the line that passed away a few years ago. So we had to make accommodations for that. But each coming deputy grandmaster will ask the brother if he would like to progress up to the next chair.
We also had a grandmaster who had short man syndrome or.
Some people
Napoleon syndrome.
Napoleon.
That, but the grandmaster.
Are you seriously baiting a grand line officer into answering that question?
Yes, I am. No, but the reason why I'm actually bringing it up for real is that it is the grandmaster's will and prerogative that if he decides to get rid of a grand line officer who is appointed, he can do it. He could just by the stroke of a pen.
He can. It's not very common, fortunately, but it's happened in our recent history. But for the most part, the deputy grandmaster for Connecticut is asking all of us that are in appointed positions if we would like our chair. So I've already accepted. So
yay.
March, I'll be. Thank you. I'll be the grand senior marshal.
Awesome. He's also the other question he's asked. The other half of it was: are all Grand Lodge officers Right Worshipful Brothers, except for the Grand Master?
Correct.
Yeah.
Grand Master is most worshipful.
Including district deputies are considered Right Worshipfuls and AGMs, which are your associate Grand Marshals. They're just Worshipful Brothers.
Correct.
Everybody else down
the stream. AGMs
retain the Right Worshipful, like yourself. And.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have permanent voting rights in Grand Lodge. I hate the district deputies that are past deputies that don't come exercise that.
No.
I can't because
if you can exercise, you shouldn't exercise.
I know. Somebody already made a freaking comment about they can see my girth on the camera because it's
we're in 1080p.
That's just a thick, like a big oversized sweatshirt. Like it's not.
But that enough.
But whiskey helps. Whiskey helps.
The camera does have a fisheye effect to it as well. So
yeah.
So what they always say the camera adds 10 pounds, right?
What are you saying? I'm elongated? Is that what you're saying?
No, you wish you were.
In the other direction.
All right. All right, so you get into Freemasonry, you sign the petition, you start your process.
Yep.
What is going through your head when you take your entered apprentice degree? Again, I always ask the preparation room question, are you shitting your pants when they ask you, you're taking your clothes off, like, what the hell did I get myself into, or were you just kind of excited to go into it? What are your feelings?
I was told to keep an open mind and don't sweat it. Mm-hmm. Every single person that has done this has done it before you. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't nervous. I was actually excited and that I was going to be a part of this fraternity. And I know some people, some lodges, they might have a more laid back joking around and, you know, try to get the candidate riled up. Fortunately, that didn't happen, and I'm not an advocate of it, but I'm not putting down lodges who do that. Every lodge is different. So everything was very above the board, very professional, if you will. So once I got inside, I was even blindfolded. I was just very comfortable, and I was told, just follow your guide.
Off our little itinerary that we have, do you wish you could have done the Chamber of Reflection? Question I get asked because there's a lot of lodges that don't have the Chamber of Reflection. You've seen ours.
Yeah.
But do you feel like it would enhance? Other reason why I'm asked is there was like some seminar, I guess, right? That was about the Chamber of Reflection.
Yeah, I think there was a Committee on Masonic Education.
Yes. They just did a Chamber of Reflection. Do you feel like that enhances or useless? What do you feel?
I don't think it's useless. I think anything that's extras is good. Just depends how the person reacts, I guess.
All right. Yeah, true. take the Master Mason degree. Progress through the chair. Excuse me. You take the Master Mason degree, and now were you voluntold to take a chair, or did you ask to take a chair?
No, neither.
Neither. Really? Interesting.
Well, the good thing about my home lodge, and Ken being a brother there as well, can attest that, you know, the lodge is very strong. We have a lot of members, and unfortunately, some lodges don't have the numbers, and, you know, newer members are asked right away. You know, the plug is C.
Yep.
I was raised in June of 2002. I sat on the sidelines for a year and a half, being able to enjoy it. 2002, 2003, around September, October, the incoming master in 2003 asked me, he goes, "You haven't missed a meeting in a year and a half. We think you're interested." And I'm like, I'm very interested. I jumped in with 2 feet and helped out. And I was asked to be the senior steward for the 2004 year, and then I was able to each step of the way, and didn't have to skip a chair.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, so
very nice.
Not a luxury that I had, but
no.
I wish I could have actually done each chair along the way, because it's, I feel like you get something out of every single chair that you take, and when you skip one, it kind of takes away from it, because then you go back and you're like, damn, I wish I could have done.
There's different lessons in each chair.
Right.
Most of yours were learned in the high chair.
So you became a steward back when Marty was cooking.
Marty was the junior steward.
Oh, was he? Okay. Was he cooking?
I think I think he was. I don't remember. He was a year, he must have been. He was a year behind me, so yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask how it felt to scrub out the tomato sauce pot when it's been boiling like during the course of the entire meeting, and you come back down and the steward's job is to clean
to scrub
everything
it.
And you got the
Again, Harmony Brothers, they didn't stick the stewards in the kitchen. Everyone pitched in.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go.
Everyone pitched in, so it made my job a lot easier.
So you get to the master's chair.
Yes.
Go through the past master grade. We're not going to talk about that one because that's a fun one. No. But you become the master of the lodge. Yes. What were your highlights and your struggles of being the master of the lodge?
I'm going to defeat the struggle one right off the top. I didn't have any struggles. And I'm not saying that. And I owe that all to every single officer that was underneath me.
You didn't have one thing that went, that like shit hit the fan.
Usually it happens in your first month.
Usually.
Like, this is going to seriously happen in your first month.
Or as you're getting out of the chair. That's right. When the other
one. Or before you're even mastered.
Like, I don't care no more. Like, I'm gone in a freaking week. Like,
or before you even become master.
Right.
What am I doing here? Now, actually, if you want to call this a struggle, it wasn't even a struggle. It was more of a dilemma. Halfway through my year as master, we were asked by Most Worshipful Lou Van Der Reich. She was a past matron in the Eastern Star. Her husband was her late husband was a brother of our lodge, and she was looking to sell her house to move out of state, and she needed the house painted. The lodge was going to donate the money to buy the paint. And we just needed brothers to paint the house, which we all said, yeah, absolutely. Well, June of 2009, and I remember this, out of 30 days in June, 21 of them were raining, misting, or some type of moisture, and we weren't going to get it done by the deadline that the bank wanted it done by.
Right.
So I went to Lou after a meeting, Most Merciful Lou, and I'm like, sir, I don't think we're going to get this done. I think we need to hire a professional painter that can come in and do it the right way, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And all the guys that were, the five or six of us that were a part of it, they were all standing off to the side, and I was like the little kid going up to the parent and saying, hey, this is the problem we're having. And Lou just sat there, kept nodding his head, and he goes, when a mason gives his word, he gives his word.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to the guys, and they were all standing there. Well, what did he say? What did he say? I'm like, we got to get it done.
Are we
going to do it?
So needless to say, we caught a break. The last week in June broke the weather, and we were able to finally get it done. Fortunately, it wasn't a big house. But that wasn't even really a struggle. It was a minor speed bump. My whole entire year, I got to say, it was filled with a lot of fun. We did a lot of programs that we didn't do before. We did a widow's luncheon. We marched in a parade that we hadn't done in the Waterbury that we hadn't done for a few years. A lot of the stuff, when I presented it to the guys, they were excited about doing it. Everyone from Marty, my senior warden, all the way down to the junior steward, Dave Andreski, everyone in between, they did a phenomenal job. Whatever I asked them, they did it. And it just, when you have that cooperation and level of enthusiasm from the brothers, they made me look like a star. And I got a lot of compliments at the end of the year, and I'm like, it's these guys who did it for me.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've always, we've joked around before on other episodes where we were talking about, you know, every master has one shit hit the fan situation.
One?
Or
well, there's usually that first one that's like a baptism of fire.
Yes,
type thing. Like,
yes.
There's a lot of stories and experiences.
And every master kind of has this. So that's I think it's pretty cool that you didn't have anything that really, you know, Murphy's Law took over and Plan A doesn't stay intact. So that's pretty cool.
No.
What's the most gratifying thing when you were master?
As a master of the lodge? Yeah.
What was that one thing that was like, this is cool, I'm glad I was master when this happened?
There's not one, and again, there's not one that really jumps out at me. It was just the entire year. Everything that we did, the widow's luncheon, we hadn't done that in a few years. We got five or six widows. They were happy to be there. They always seem to be forgotten about, you know, and that's one of my pet peeves is when lodges don't reach out to the widows or the brothers who don't live in state anymore, you know, the elderly brothers who can't get out. Marching in the parade, the Memorial Day parade, that was a highlight. I organized, we had a good run of about maybe 8 years. We did an annual fishing charter. We started it, fishing trip. We had a blast with that. There's not one thing that really jumps out. It's just, I look back at my year as master. It was the most fun I ever had as a mason. And, it's just because of everybody involved. I mean, we had easily 30 to 40 guys showing up at just business meetings.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
That's impressive.
The
brothers at Harmony are very, very good. If there's things going on at the lodge, they show up, and, you know, Ken can attest. I mean, we have good turnouts at all of our major events. I think we started up around that time. I don't know if it was the year before me, my year, or Marty's year, but we started up the George Washington dinner again, and that's...
Oh, those dinners get people out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get large crowds for that, so...
That's really cool.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So, 2 years or 1 year as master?
1 year.
1 year as master.
Yep.
After you're done with master, what are you thinking? Right off to the sunset, or were you looking for more? And we'll get into Blue Lodge Council in a minute and what that's all about. But what are you thinking now? Because most masters, they get out of the chair. I won't say most.
Yeah.
There's a good one amount thing, that they just disappear.
There was, right. We were just talking about pet peeves. My pet peeve is a past master who just done with his year and they just go on.
I have my thoughts on that. We'll probably get to that later based on your agenda, why that happens. My year, I really didn't want it to end. As corny as that sounds, it was the truth. I was having so much fun, but to this day, we still have a strong line of officers. It's very rare that a master has to repeat a year, usually because somebody moves. Dan Sharkis had to do another year because a brother had to move away and he couldn't participate. The guy who, one of my signatures on my application that got me the sergeant there, who I found practicing his ritual, because of a job assignment, he couldn't take up his year as master. He had to step down as senior warden. So my year, I really didn't want it to end. I was having so much fun. And I really didn't have time to catch my breath. We were having our annual Christmas party, which I think was another thing that we started around my year. And the late past Grandmaster, Art Carlstrom, pulled me aside, and he goes, "Do you want to be a district deputy?" And now my year is not even over yet.
At the Christmas party? Wow.
At the Christmas party.
That's a good little Christmas party. Way to go, Art.
Side note, just some housekeeper I want to keep up with. Worshipful Greg, Worshipful Brother Greg Schultz, is the Assistant Grand Almoner a Right Worshipful?
No, I answered that in the comments.
No, yeah, correct?
No, I am just Worshipful. Right. It's very similar to the Associate Grand Marshal.
Right.
It's just Brother, Worshipful Brother, depending on their current title.
Cool. Larry off the grind. Good afternoon. As of last Saturday, I could finally call y'all brothers. EA21321. Congratulations.
Congrats,
brother.
Congratulations, Larry off the grid.
For not by grind. That sacred apparition grid. We can now address
grid.
You.
Grid. Larry off the grid. Okay. Whatever. Grind, grid. Same.
It's one of those shows. One of those shows where I'm just going to be all over you.
I know. I can tell already. So you were district deputy before you were Blue Lodge Council President?
Yes.
Really?
Right after my year.
I think this is when I started to come. Well, I mean, I was coming as the junior warden and the worshipful master. But this is where I started to get more involved in Blue Lodge Council. And I kind of, I don't want to say rid your coattails, but you were the Blue Lodge Council President of the 3rd District. And I think I was chaplain, correct? Or vice president or something like that?
You had a couple different titles. I was president for 3 years. Yeah, I think you had a couple different titles. You were the chaplain. I think you were the vice president.
Yep.
And my last year, I think you were the vice president. And
right.
You took over.
Right. So I can't remember if you were already a district deputy or...
I became district deputy April of 2010 under Most Worshipful Charlie Buck. And then the following year, second year with... Jim McQuain, Most Worshipful Jim McLean. I think there might have been a year in between my second year as district deputy and when I became Blue Lodge Council.
So I just, if you can clear up just something for me, because this was something that was said to me back in the day, is that before the permanent members of 3rd District, I mean, this is before the whole saga that went on, before... The permanent members would pick somebody to be a district deputy, you had to sit as president of the Blue Lodge Council. Or it was encouraged that you did that. Do you know if that was...
If that is... I don't recall that. I'm not saying that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. I just don't recall that being...
Okay,
It used to be way back in the day was, at least for the 3rd District, I can't vouch for the other districts, was they used to rotate the lodges who would be a district deputy, whose turn it was.
Right.
But as numbers dwindled over the years, they couldn't do that anymore. So
no, because the reason why I'm asking is because I didn't realize, I thought you were a Blue Lodge Council President before you were district deputy, because I was president and was chosen to be district deputy. And I don't want to say it was frowned upon, but they wanted, I think you actually counseled me on this. I think you said they wanted at least 10 years or something along those. They wanted a Mason who had been established before they would just throw a district deputy in the...
Yeah, in that the, was, the that, that's the old school mentality. And, you know, like you should be, you know, at least a Mason for, you know, five, six, seven years, but at least a couple years before you get into the chairs. I mean, that's ideal situation.
Right.
You know, that doesn't always happen.
Traditionally, isn't it always, it's not always, obviously, because you went straight to district deputy, but isn't it customary, I guess, for a brother to be tapped for associate grand marshal?
That's another situation where it's ideal. Okay. You want
but it
to
doesn't
be
always work out.
No, it doesn't work out that way for a lot of different reasons. Just a lot of people can't commit to it. A lot of people just don't want to be a district deputy. But that's another one of those things where ideally if you could be an AGM first, an associate grand marshal, so you get a taste of what it's like to be a district deputy. Like, do I actually really want to do this after you see the district deputy going through what he goes through?
Another regret of mine that I wasn't able to be an AGM before a DD. Yep. I went right to DD, and luckily I was smart enough to know that, you know, I better read the rules and regulations and bone my ass up before I just – you know, take this chair and you know, run around like a chicken with my head cut off, not knowing what was going on. But that's the reason why I was asking, is because I was kind of thrown to the wolves. And, you know, based off of what you just said, that you were, you know, district deputy before you were Blue Ridge Council president, you know, if you had that same sort of like where you took the district deputy and you were like, holy shit, what did I get myself into?
Right.
Because I kind of had that feeling in the beginning myself, like, oh my God. And then with God, what happened in his lodge was,
yeah,
holy shit.
It's overwhelming if you don't know what it entails. And I had no idea what it entailed. Just being an officer at a lodge, you know what the district deputy does when he comes in, he does the inspection. But you don't see what goes on behind the scenes, all the requirements. And like you, I wish I was an AGM because then it kind of prepares you for your year or years as district deputy. So, yeah.
Right.
A couple of things. I just want to get to a couple of comments that we're getting here. Larry Off the Grid said thank you for his toast there. We have a brother named Charles that says, good afternoon, brother. Shane, lose that damn jacket. That would be
sorry, it's not one going anywhere.
Charles, a.k.a. Chip Schofield, is watching us today.
Sorry, Chip.
There's been a call for Jai Everlin has said, we haven't seen Joe's green jacket in a couple of episodes. That's because I'm driving a new car and the green clashes with the gray and black. So I'm that OCD.
You're extra.
Chip Schofield said, I agree with the brother being an AGM before being a DD.
100%.
And I just wanted a quick timeout. Shout out to brother Chip Schofield. Appreciate him hopping on today. Gave him a call before and said, hey, hop on. It's going to be a lot of fun today.
Mm-hmm.
So good to see him here. Love you, brother.
Absolutely, Chip.
Yeah, definitely agree with. I wish I would have been an AGM before a DD, only because, well, my year, the Grandmaster decided to just change the entire inspection form and just basically throw it out the window. Right. But the second year, when we went back to the old form, there's a lot of financials on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wish I would have known what I could and could not do, because I did have one secretary who... you already know who I'm talking about, didn't want to give me any financials, and I didn't know what's the power of a DD when a secretary goes, no, up yours, get out, in you know, so many
you're
words.
Funny, as it turns out, you're now that guy.
Who?
You're the secretary saying, no, up yours. Or you were.
Yeah, not anymore.
Switch roles. But you were.
Chip Schofield, George, we are all alike. Holy shit, what did Grand Lodge do make? What did Grand Lodge do making you DD? Yeah.
Isn't there a height requirement?
Yeah, well, seriously?
I told you it was going to be one of those days.
I know. So, you're Blue Lodge Council President. Yep. You've just quick entail, can you just kind of tell everybody what Blue Lodge Council is and what being the president means?
I don't think we've ever covered this. That's why.
No, that we did.
We did?
No, I don't think that we did.
No, we didn't, so...
All right, well, in the 3rd District at least, and it's probably more or less the same throughout the 9 districts in Connecticut, is the Blue Lodge Council is where every other month between September and May, all the lodges get together. And from what I understand from the really old-timers who I love listening to, I love listening to stories, I'm Generation X. I'm caught in between the baby boomers and the millennials and the other generation, so... I can appreciate the old timers, and I can also appreciate the younger generations of where we are. But Blue Lodge Council was where lodges used to get together at the every other month meeting, and they would discuss what was coming up in their lodges, events. You know, this was long before the internet and emails and stuff like that, and they didn't want to pay for postage to send out all the flyers about what they were doing. So what do Masons do? They get together, they have a meal, and the Blue Lodge Council in the 3rd District was a hopping thing back in the day, talking to old-timers like Ed Ross and Louis van der Reich and Art Karlstrom. There would easily be 75, 80 Masons at one of these meetings. There were some type of Masonic lectures and information. And it was just really just a chance to get together and, you know, help each other out.
Mm. So I'm going to change it a little bit because I did have an itinerary. I was going to talk about one thing.
It's usually bad when you go.
I want to talk about the reason why he brought it up. He goes, because I appreciate the old timers and the young guys. And so there is a quote unquote old timer who was supposed to be getting his 50-year pin this year for Morningstar. He's already got a smile on his face.
Oh, okay.
Do you know the story?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so it's customary that the Grand Lodge representative of that district is to give the pin, 50-year pin, to the brother of the said lodge, whatever it is.
Right.
This one particular brother decided that he wanted, he wrote a right worshipful so-and-so. And then he put, and GM. Okay, so I'm like, wow. I mean, he actually wants the Grandmaster to come down and present him his paint. All right, whatever. Tomato, tomato. It's, you know, right, your prerogative. What I didn't realize is that my initials were also GM, and he meant me. This is as I'm leaving the secretary's chair now, like I'm already in landing mode, right? The gears are down, you know, the flaps are up, like I'm coming in for landing, right?
Yeah.
And so I sent him and I said, listen, this is going to be the new secretary, you know, Jim Rafferty. And I said, you know, the Grand Lodge officer, who is Shane Dufresne, is supposed to be giving, you know, is the ones who give you your pin.
Mm-hmm.
And I left it at that and I walk away. So a couple weeks ago, I'm driving in my truck, and I get an email. I pull over to the side of the road and look at the email, and it's a said right worshipful who decided to say, yeah, Brother Mojo, if you want Brother Mojo to do it, not a problem. He could do it for you. And I want to thank you for that sandbag, because I thought I was out. I thought it was done. Like, I'm landing mode, and then...
Well, you know what? It's my honest opinion that, you know, it's the brother who's receiving the pin on how he wants to receive it. You know, he can receive it in the mail. He can receive it when things are normal at the Nutmegger reunion down in Florida. He can receive it in Lodge. He can receive it at Blue Lodge Council. This brother wants Right Worshipful Brother Mudry to present his 50-year pin, and who am I to deny that brother the honor and privilege of getting his pin from you?
So I just want to be clear on a couple things before I continue with this, is that you should always address a Grand Lodge officer by Right Worshipful, you know, whoever. You should always show much. Me and you have had a long history of going through a whole ordeal. Mm-hmm. So me and you have become very close friends and everything. So normally, I wouldn't be calling up a Grand Lodge officer and saying this, but I did call up and I went, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, way to show deference.
After I hit the send button, He was already laughing.
He picks up the phone and he's already going,
I literally timed myself after I hit the send button. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be getting a call less than 10 minutes. And I think it was like 4 minutes later.
Realistically, I don't mind doing it. It was just a funny little thing. I'm like, you son of a bitch. You sandbagged me. But, all right. So you're done with Blue Edge Council. You're done with District Deputy. What are you thinking now? Do you want to move up to the Grand Line, or are you happy riding off to the sunset at this point?
This has been my philosophy ever since I became a Mason, and this is why I can appreciate the old timers and because where they come from is don't expect anything in Masonry. Don't expect to become an officer. Don't expect to become the master of your lodge. Don't expect to be an AGM, a district deputy. Don't expect anything. Whatever you get comes to you because of what you do in the fraternity. You should not be doing anything with the expectation of, yeah, I'm going to be a district deputy or I'm going to be the Grand Lodge officer. You should be doing stuff as a Mason because it's in your heart, not because you have your eyes set on a bigger prize. So, like I said, listening to guys from my lodge, like Lou Vanderreich and John Van Kirk and Dave Sharkis and Joe Sear, all these past district deputies and Lou being a past Grand Master, was we do things because it's in your heart and you want to do the right thing, not because, hey, look at me, look what I did. You know, I deserve to be a district deputy or I deserve to be a Grand Lodge officer. So I was honored and floored when they asked me to be the guy to scrub the dishes, you know, be a steward. Like, really, you want me to scrub dishes? Okay. And then when Art asked me, again, I never expected it. It was always told to me, don't ever expect anything. So that's what I try to tell newer Masons. When Art asked me to be a district deputy, it really knocked me over. I was floored. And the same thing when I was asked for the Grand Line.
You reading that one?
Hey, Right Worshipful Chip Schofield writes, doesn't Right Worshipful Shane realize he's one of the old timers now?
No, I'm not. Well, I'm not, Chip. Not yet.
No, but to your point and on that philosophy, I think that's my own philosophy, too. It's like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Right.
Regardless of if you give me a title or a different color apron or whatever, I'm still going to do my thing. If you give me a larger platform to do it on,
right,
great, because right, that's how I can help the fraternity better. But if you don't, I'm still going to do my thing. It doesn't change who I am as a Mason and what I want to do. And like you said, what's in your heart.
What's in your heart. Yeah. That's what we're asked, you know.
If you go into it expecting to get some sort of reward or award or appointed some position or something like that, you're doing it wrong anyway.
Right.
Your Ashlar is a little rough in that case because that's kind of counter to what being a Mason is all about.
And I think a lot of guys get disappointed because they're like, well, you know, I do all these fundraisers. I do this chip program. I do this. I do that. And no one's asking me. That's the wrong attitude, I think.
We talked about the title chasers a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, you shouldn't go into anything expecting that, oh, look what I did, you know, put a feather in my cap, and ooh, look, see what I'm doing, because, you know, that's not a good, you shouldn't do, just like you said, you shouldn't do things with the expectation that there's going to be a reward at the end of it, because most of the most charitable acts go unrecognized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
It falls in line with most worshipful grandmasters, past grandmaster Mel Johnson's philosophy and what he had on his pin. And if I butcher the pronunciation,
Mudita,
which is finding happiness and joy from the happiness of others.
Right.
That's your reward, is seeing other people happy.
That's what we're supposed to be doing as Masons.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. So, question for you.
Yes.
Again, not bringing up the
not bringing it up, but I'm going to bring it up.
No. I'm gonna
like, no offense, but you're about to be offended.
I'm going to word it differently. That we did have a point where there was a little bit of power trip.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find it as moving into the Grand Lodge, a Grand Line, and how do you ground yourself? Because again, one of the things we've said before many, many times, famous quote, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. What grounds you? And the reason why I'm asking, again, talked about it in the podcast, you know, Joe's busting my balls, I got a fucking puppet named after me, you know, it's my show. But one of the things I do is I delegate power. I give, you know, I try to make it so that I don't have the final say in anything, and this keeps me from going off the rails, which we all know can happen.
Like, you mean when we get together in a pre-production meeting, we're like, okay, we're going to talk about this, we're not going to talk about this.
And then we talk about it.
But then we talk about it anyway, because you decide that you're doing it anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
Something
just
like
want to clarify.
How do you, as a Grand Line officer, how do you feel that that's a worry? Because, how do I put this? Grandmasters have extreme power.
Right.
We've seen cases, not just in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Well, even recently in South Carolina, there was that whole dust up.
Yes.
Right. I'll leave it at that.
Where a grandmaster or somebody gets up to that point where they have absolute power,
mm-hmm.
How do you keep yourself grounded? How would you say you keep yourself grounded?
Well, for me, off the top of my head, it's two things. I know you guys know what I do for a living. A police officer. Police officers have a lot of power. Okay, so becoming, and I'm going to parlay into this connection if it makes any sense, is having power isn't something new to me.
Mm.
Okay, there's unfortunately some people who never had any type of power in their life, and now they get a taste of it, and they don't know how to ground themselves.
Good point.
Being a police officer for 25 years, having some type of power, if you will, I don't look at it as having power. I look at it as I'm doing the will of the brothers. The other thing that really keeps me grounded is my brothers. Is when I'm a current district deputy and someone in my lot says, hey, we need you to take out the garbage. Okay.
Right. Yeah, he still does that.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
So the brothers in my lodge, they keep me grounded, and I don't think I this is my personal belief, I don't think I have a power. I don't think I'm egotistical.
Right.
I have brothers like Chip Schofield, who's listening, Marty McCary, George, Ken, you know, all these guys that I look at as my brothers and mentors, and they're my equals. I'm not, you know, they're not my subordinates. I'm not superior to them. And we keep each other in check, and we know where everyone stands. And I don't go into a lodge because I have a purple apron on now, like, you know, I'm on some power. I really don't. I don't think I do. And I think it stems from A, from my career, and B, the brothers in my lodge.
So on that subject, talking about the purple, we've done the purple stigma before about wearing a purple apron. Again, I've worn purple, you've worn purple. And sometimes you walk in a lodge and that shit turns ice freaking cold.
It does.
How do you break that? How do you show the brothers that? And again, my thing was, you know, drinking a lot of bourbon at Washington 19, which I probably shouldn't have drove home, and I don't condone driving home afterward. But police officer. No, but you know, that's how I broke my ice with particular set of brothers. How do you do it?
Well, fortunately for me, I've been around the block now. For a new district deputy, it's harder, especially if you're from the northern part. If you're from one part of our district and you're down at the other end, and if they don't know you, it's going to take you a little bit long. It's going to take anybody a little bit longer. But you know, I was a district deputy for 2 years. I was the Blue Lodge Council president for 3 years. I was the Grand Almoner for 4 years. So the guys got to know me, and they know what I'm about. And I always, you know, a lot of masters when I came to the lodge as a district deputy outside of the inspection or as a Grand Almoner or as my current position, do you want to be received? No, I don't need to be received. Do you want to sit up in the east? No, I'm going to sit with the brothers on the sideline.
Right.
Some guys want to sit up in the east, that, you know, and I'm not discrediting them for wanting to do that.
Brother Shane, just watch your hands because you're blocking the mic. Yeah, you're good.
I'm part Italian, so I talk with my hands.
The good part.
The good part. So I think...
Isn't your name French, though? Dufresne?
Yeah.
Oh. So half of you wants to fight all the time, the other half wants to surrender. How do you deal with that?
It's a struggle. It's a power struggle. But Italians and French, we're both, you know, we're both lovers, so I got that going for me.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
So
sorry.
It's only power struggle.
I had the shot, so I took it.
You gotta take the shot.
But as you progress, the brothers get used to you. You're around more often, so they know. After a while, when I walk in, there's really not, oh my God, it's the purple's here. It's Shane.
Yeah.
Which is the way I want. There's a time to be courteous and professional. There's other times, you know, table lodge and, you know, whatever. You know, we're just brothers.
That's Do you feel that some grandmasters get to that point where they walk in and they try to just own the room? There's some of them that have been the most humble I've ever met in my entire life. And one of those, I gotta get the shout out, right? Most worshipful, Mel Johnson.
Mel was one.
He came up here and hung out with us, and he was the most humble, cool grandmaster. Yeah. That one of the best, I think, that we've ever had. And then there's others that are just, look at me.
There, it's been my experience that the overwhelming majority of the brothers who get to be grandmaster, they are very humble and contrite. There's really only one that I can see that it went right to his head immediately. Another brother who I try to model myself outside of most worshipful Lou Van Der Eyck is the most recently late is R. Carlstrom. R. Carlstrom is a sitting grandmaster, would walk into lodge and would not put on his purple and his gold. He would grab a white apron. I'm here as a brother. I'm not here as a grandmaster.
He was a riot, by the way, too. Art Carlston was hysterical. I never had the pleasure to meet Lou Van Der Eyck, most worshipful of Lou.
Lou was another one of the most humblest men you ever met.
Art Carlston, man, he's a funny dude. He was hysterical.
He was.
And I tell you, that's a powerful statement when a grandmaster walks into your lodge and wears the white apron and doesn't want to sit in the east. I've had the experience, too. While I was master, our most worshipful brother Jim McQueen was one of them, and most worshipful brother Tom Maxwell. Same thing.
Yeah, Tom Maxwell too. Yeah,
yep. White apron, Tom, doesn't want to be received.
Tom Maxwell left the Grand East and then became marshal at our lodge.
Right.
Me
and him had some libations at a table lodge one time.
Also that, yeah.
But it's a powerful statement, and it's good because then it gives maybe that young and up-and-coming guy an example to look towards and go, wow, that was memorable.
Right.
That's what I'm going to emulate that as if I am fortunate enough to go through that path.
That was one of the things that really start me on my way of getting the purple and gold is my year in the East, 2009, Art Carlstrom was the grandmaster. He was the third district representative. So when you see a guy, and Art Carlstrom was called Mr. Mason in Waterbury. He was the head of every body in Connecticut, Scottish Rite, the York Rite bodies, DeMolay. He was a DeMolay kid from when he was a kid. He was the guy, he was like the epitome of what Masonry is. And like Joe was saying, when he walks in, does not put on his grandmaster apron or his jewels, and he grabs a white apron. And I asked him, you don't want to be received? He goes, I'm a brother. I'm not here as a grandmaster. That's one of the things that stuck in my head is the grandmaster is going to sit here in a white apron.
Yeah.
Who the heck am I as a district deputy to walk in like I own
the room? Exactly. And it sticks with you. It really does stick with you.
It really does.
Just on a side note, though, every time Joe walks into the lodge room, I grab my jewels. Clover Style
Hitman. If you don't, I will.
Clover Style Hitman says, thanks for the wisdom. Obviously, a lot of knowledge at that table.
It's leaning more towards my left, but
we've had some stuff happen.
We've had some stuff. But, you know, I think...
I got something in my eye real quick. Right?
There are two stories I want to tell regarding some of my interactions with the Right Worshipful Brother Shane. That, like, anybody can sit here and tell you their perspective, but I can tell you that he doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk. First interaction that I had with Right Worshipful Brother was when he was the Grand Almoner, and there was a widow up in the Bristol area, I want to say, that needed to have a roof put on her house, and if I remember correctly, she had a contractor that kind of split on her halfway through the job. Or maybe she ran out of money. Whichever the case, the job was half finished, the roof was torn off, and we had a hurricane coming in about a week.
Oof.
So as Grand Almoner, he put the word out and said, I need help. We need to get as many brothers together to try to accomplish this. And, you know, it was a little far from my district, but I said, you know, screw it. I'll drive up and I'll help out that day. Nice. And, you know, I was there for 3-4 hours on a Saturday or Sunday, I forget what it was, but I was there to pitch in. But he put together a project. That roof got done before, probably 3 or 4 days before the hurricane hit. So it was done. But that was, I think, the first year. Your first year as Grand Almoner.
It was my second year, I think. It was Ted Nelson was the Grand Master at the time.
But it was a big deal. It was like, to me, again, it kind of renewed my faith in this is what we do.
Right.
Widow is in need, and like you said, we often forget about our widows. Unfortunate, and it's just not condoning it, but it's one of our faults. We often forget, and to be involved with that project, even a little bit for a few hours on one day, kind of it gave me a good sense and a good renewal. I forget where I was in line at the time. But the other interaction we had was recently, and I'm going to be very vague on this purposely. Late spring, early summer, there was some stuff going on in the country, and I had a certain particular point of view that, at least on the surface initially, it looked like maybe we had a different point of view based on his profession. And we reached out to each other, and we ended up getting together and went and had breakfast with Right Worshipful Brother Chip Schofield as well. Just, I guess Chip showed up just in case, you know.
I needed backup.
Just to make sure. But we sat down and we had a conversation. And even though we had different questions and different opinions and maybe even different point of views, some that I would never understand unless I walked in his shoes, we had a great conversation. And on top of that, it was great fellowship.
Right.
And it just goes to show that we don't always have all the answers. We don't always see things the same way. But we can find that common ground and still have fellowship at the end of the day. And those are just things that, you know, tip of the cap to you. You live what you're talking about. It's not just, hey, let me throw this out there. And I've had two personal experiences that I just wanted to share and back that up.
I totally agree with Brother Joe. However, just a minute ago, when we were talking about the roof, I was thinking of like the scene in Ben-Hur when they're all on the bottom of the boat. Talking about doing the roof. Right, Worshipful Shane's just there whipping them.
I only had to do it once or twice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you did. Yeah,
not for nothing, though.
I had to at one point.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, and I remember that specifically. We'll talk about that offline. But that sometimes was like, I'm like, oh man, I'm glad that's not me.
But I'm gonna follow that up with is as my year as master in 2009, I got a lot of kudos and attaboys. I deflected it to my officers because I couldn't do it without the 8 guys underneath me. We spent 2 weekends at that widow's lodge, and guys like you, some guys showed up, they were there, you know, 10 hours a day, all day. Other guys were there 3-4, whatever they can spare. I mean, people have families, they have other things they got to do, they got work. Over the course of 2 weekends, Ken Tarwood was there, I know. There was, I want to say, close to a total of 60 guys over both weekends that showed up for all or part of that weekend.
Right.
Shane Dufresne didn't do that.
Right.
60 brothers who got together did that. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I got the pat on the back from the Grand Lodge officers, and I'm like, you know, no. 59 other guys that were there, you know, we got it done.
In regards to...
Is it possible that you and I met that weekend and didn't really know?
I think so, yeah.
That's funny.
Because I was just thinking back to that, because you said that you were there, and I'm like, I don't remember choking.
I was there the second weekend.
No shit.
And Ken came prepared. I remember him having work boots on, so he came to work.
I brought my own hammer, too.
You did?
Yeah.
I think I might have...
Everybody thought it was cute.
I might have brought my tool back.
Yeah. It was like one of those yellow, like, anti-vibe vinyl. They're like,
Stanley anti-shock ones making fun of me.
I don't know what the situation was where Shane had to whoop some ass or whatever.
Oh, it's a good one. I'll tell you later.
It doesn't matter, though. But let's be real, though. What happens when a bunch of Masons get together?
We screw around.
Yeah.
It's a giant, you know... We need to be whipped in shape sometimes.
Were you there the weekend that happened?
Do you recall? You'll have to tell me after what happened.
Yeah, we'll talk about
it
afterwards.
It's possible that I saw it and just forgot about
Unfortunately,
it.
Unfortunately, that is the one downside of when Masons do charitable events or when do charitable things. Like, for instance, we do our car show, and I could just remember just... You know, worship brother Phil Miller in the golf cart.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Just doing laps around the freaking parking lot. Yeah. What are you doing? Come on, we got, you know. So
That's the old Ashler Aspetuck golf tournament.
Yeah,
the golf cart
sometimes place. These charitable things that we're supposed to be doing things either turn into a talking fest or they turn into a shit show where you need somebody like Shane to come in and be like, hey, get off your ass and go grab something. You know what I mean? So let's get into the last half of this. You're a Grand Lodge officer.
Yep.
What is your? We'll call it the state of the craft address.
State of the craft, huh?
How do you feel the state of masonry is right now, either in Connecticut, worldwide? I mean, granted, I know we got this COVID crap going on, but how do you see masonry advancing, getting better, taking, you know, going even further down into the negative? And if so, what improvements have you seen or do you recommend that masonry makes?
I'm going to be honest, I can't speak for worldwide. I'm not in tune to what's going around the world in other grand jurisdictions. I can speak a little bit about the United States, but more specifically about Connecticut. Is, in my opinion, right now we're in a process of evolving and changing. We can spend a couple hours on a podcast as to why Masonry is changing and what's happening in Freemasonry. The big part of it is we simply don't have the numbers that we used to. And that's just not in Freemasons. A couple years back, a couple of the top three or four Grand Lodge officers, they actually met with their counterparts in other fraternities, the Elks, the Knights of Columbus. Their membership is down. Guys are just not joining fraternities like they used to. I work with five police officers who are military veterans. Not one of them belonged to the VFW or the American Legion. That's something that their grandfather, their father did. Yeah. All fraternity numbers are down, and we could speculate as to why. Probably the biggest reason is family dynamics have changed. Guys are working two jobs. Guys are
the idiot box, as I call it, the phone.
Guys are staying at home at night because their wife is working. So it's not like the old days, like, you know, Ralph Cramden and his sidekick going to lodge at night, you know, once a week. You know, bowling leagues are gone just about away because people they don't want to commit to something where they have to be because their life is always in flux. So
hey, Norton.
So I've never seen it. Well, must be a 40-year-old thing or a 50-year-old thing, right?
This is why we're the best
50,
generation.
40.
Exactly. It is.
You fucking millennials. I think we established that technically you guys are millennials.
Me and Ken are millennials.
Yeah, I'm like right on the cusp.
Of course you are.
So am I.
Of course you are.
I'm 80.
Of course you are.
82. When the hell was I born? 82. 1982.
Oh, okay. So you're 1 year after me.
You know, I'm literally like floating, but
okay.
My mind is 1 year prior.
Soft. Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're Gen Xers through and through mentally.
On what you were saying about the craft, you know, membership fluctuation, do you think it's a good thing that they're actually getting smaller? We had an episode, you know, not too long ago where we discussed that. I think the phrase I used was the shit you own ends up owning you. Mm-hmm. For instance, we have big hospitals, we have big things that we have going on, and what happens is now you have a shrinking membership. Mm-hmm. with all these big giant enterprises and charitable things. So they're great, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But what ends up happening is the craft suffers to try to keep these things in play.
Right.
So do you think masonry should be smaller, or do you want the numbers to be exponentially high?
You know, I hate to sound like a Debbie Downer, is masonry is not going to see the numbers that we saw. No. It's just not going to happen. I would love to it, ideally. You know, who wouldn't want a couple hundred lodges in their state with tens of thousands of Masons? The more the better, the more we can do. Freemasonry hit its peak in Connecticut in 59 or 60. We had 60,000 Masons. And since then, every 20 years, the membership declines in half. Mm. So we're right now, give or take, about 8,000 Masons in Connecticut. It's going to continue to drop. As soon as the baby boomers are gone, that's what's keeping the numbers afloat right now. We're going to level, my personal guess, and I don't have any stats or any magic wand to verify this, but my guess is we're going to level off probably somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 Masons in Connecticut. We have 90 lodges right now. Some lodges are really, really struggling to hold a meeting. They can't get, you know, members to show up. And this is not to be, again, a Debbie Downer, but these lodges need to look at themselves and say, are we functioning properly as a Masonic lodge? Mm-hmm. I get it. You were the master of the lodge. Your grandfather was a past master of the lodge. You know, you have this number. Masonry isn't about the numbers. It's pride not about your lodge name. It's not about your lodge number. It's about what you do.
Pride goeth before a fall. And when you're too proud to admit, hey, we're in deep shit here, unfortunately, you back yourself into a corner where you just won't let go. And, you know, I don't know if I was joking with you or Trip Schofield or somebody I was talking to about, being a DD and saying, hey, maybe you guys should merge. It's like your death sentence to actually, to go in there and spit knowledge and say, hey, you know, maybe you guys should merge with this other lodge. And you want to talk about, you know, all unholy hell being unleashed on you for simply saying the word merge.
Right.
Mm. It'll get you, it'll get you thrown out of that, in a sense, thrown out of lodges, but people would be pissed off at you.
Yeah, but I can tell you from personal experience that sometimes those real conversations are exactly what a lodge needs to wake up. Yeah. Because people that haven't been there, the past masters that don't show up, or members that don't regularly attend, start to hear about these conversations like, what the hell happened? And you have to look them in the eye and say, well, part of the reason is because you haven't been here. And other brothers like you haven't been here. Right, Chip
just said the same thing. He said lodge consolidation is the answer.
Right.
But you have no idea how many lodges, they just don't want to hear it. Like, they just are just so stuck in their damn ways.
But then you know what? Take the wake-up call that you're actually having that conversation and try to turn it around.
I mean, I look at it this way, though. I mean, we had an instance not too long ago that the Grand Master walked into a lodge. I don't want to give town or location or anything, but he walked into a freaking lodge, and there was three Masons there. It was the top three, and that was it. And he basically said, you're on probation, and you're going to lose your freaking charter. So if you're so prideful that if you're not going to be able to realistically weather the storm, I would much rather consolidate, keep a chip of your history.
And go on your own terms.
Rather than just have it yanked out from underneath you.
Agree, 100%.
If I could just give one little story about that. When I was district deputy, we had a lodge in our district who's no longer, they wind up turning their charter about 6 months after my second year. It was the same thing. It was said for years that this lodge was struggling, blah, 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 that whole thing that goes along with it. So.
Is this in third district? Or
something? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. No, lodge is no longer. They turned in their charter 2011-ish, second half. But I went to myself and my AGM, Marty McCary, went to every single one of their meetings for 2 years, every single meeting. I would say easily 90-95% of the meetings, if we weren't there, they didn't have three Masons to open. So myself and or Marty would have to sit in one of the three chairs just so the master can open the lodge.
I mean, we've been lucky here where we were able to build membership, and we're doing just fine now. But
when it was talked about them facing the inevitable, what are you doing here? And this wasn't new to me.
Right.
Art Carlstrom, when he was a district deputy 20 years before he was Grand Master, said that lodge should have been closed down back then.
Yeah.
They would, every time the discussion came up, guys would literally fly in from Florida, drive down from New Hampshire, Vermont. No, we're not closing. My grandfather was master.
So, yes, the infamous past master assassination right there.
So I'm sitting there for this one particular meeting because the conversation came up again. The room was full. The lodge wasn't a big big room to begin with, but it was full. Now, mind you, just a few months prior, myself and another Wright Rushville, Andy Wyman, installed the officers at the lodge. Half of the officers were not at the installation. Only one sitting officer had people there. There was no one else on the sideline except for his wife and his two young kids. So now we're fast forward to this meeting, and this respected brother from their lodge is like, you know, every so often we got to do this. Why does Grand Lodge want to take our charter? All these excuses as to why they shouldn't shut down. So I let everyone talk, and everyone had their say. So the sitting master at the time says, "Right, Ritual, do you have any words?" And I stood up, and I'm like, "Thank you." I'm like, "That's great that you guys are here. Where were you for the installation? Mm-hmm. Where were you when myself and my AGM had to sit in a chair just so you can open a meeting?" Mm-hmm. And the one respected guy that did most of the talking, this is the one that kind of kept the lodge going for 20, 25 years. He drove down from New Hampshire to do his talking. And I said what I had to say. And I'm like, "Listen, you know, it is what it is. We're not taking the charter from you. We're just asking you to look and see why are you continuing to do this when none of you are here."
Right.
And he finally, he stood back up and he says, "You know what? You're right." You know, I'm paraphrasing and shortening what he said. And, you know, by the time the process happened, it carried over into the next district deputy. But trust me, you know, a lot of people are always worried about Grand Lodge wants to take your charter. They want to suspend you. They want your money is always a big thing. It's like Grand Lodge does not want any of that. I've been a Grand Lodge officer between my current position, Tom Maxwell's marshal, a Grand Almoner. Not once has it ever come up in a Grand Lodge meeting, "Oh, we're going to take their charter," or "We want their money." Grand Lodge looks good if we have
a lot
of lodges.
I just pictured Mr. Burns in his office. Yes, get the money.
Yeah, it looks better if we're thriving.
If we're thriving. Charter.
You have a thriving lodge that's out in the community doing great things. That's the best advertisement you could possibly have.
And on the flip side, we as a whole, we look bad when you get a lodge that's really struggling. You get a guy that comes in because, "Hey, I want to be a Mason." And he comes in and he shows up for, you know, 10 business meetings a year. They're not doing Masonic things. And he's like, "Why am I joining this?"
So let me ask a question. What are your, I know you're the senior warden of your lodge. What are you in your lodge? What position do you hold?
I'm Tyler right now.
Shane, do you hold anything in your lodge?
Not my lodge, no chair.
So one of the gauges that me personally have for a lodge is if my lodge can sustain itself is to take somebody who has always been the patriarch of the lodge, such as me or Joe or whoever the patriarch may be, and tell them you don't want to take a chair next year. Mm-hmm. Can your lodge survive without you there?
Right.
If your lodge can survive without you there, I think you're okay.
Right.
But we have this thing where we have lodges where they have these two, maybe three guys who we call them a clique, right? We did the whole episode clique.
Yep.
It's the clique that runs the show. You know, they're the ones that are keeping the lodge afloat. If you pull those one, two, three brothers out of the line, take them away, walk away. Take a Masonic vacation. Go away for 6 months.
Right.
What happens to that lodge?
Yeah.
If that lodge cannot keep itself afloat, you ain't got nothing. Right. You got to merge.
You're in a bad spot.
So let's get away from the doom and gloom.
Yes.
Let's get to the last section.
Yes.
Funny Masonic stories about things that have happened that a lot doesn't have to be in your lodge. It could be any lodge, something that you've seen that was absolute hilarity, and you'll never forget it. It sticks with you. Because we all have our stories about shit that goes wrong. I talked about Gary Tuccio when I asked, what the hell was that line I used? Withdraw now while there is yet time. And he comes back and he goes, "Nope." And I freaking lost it, and I was done for the rest of the degree. You know, something that happened to you that was
outside of the stories. Outside of the past master degrees, which we won't talk about.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that really sticks out, and because he continues to break my balls to it about this day, is Chris Martinelli. I hope you're watching this, Chris, because I'm giving you a shout-out right now. A bunch of us met at the Home Depot parking lot in Waterbury because we were commuting to a lodge. I might have been the Blue Lodge Council. I don't remember what position I had at the time, but I was meeting two brothers from Liberty, me and Marty McCary, and I'm driving. So I say, "Everybody all set?" And I hear three yups. and I start to drive away. Apparently, Chris Martinelli's not all the way in the car.
I thought he was sleeping.
He probably fell asleep. And he I don't want to say he got dragged, but he.
I don't want to say officially. It wasn't in the statement I gave you.
I wasn't in the statement.
He got pulled against his will.
He stumbled a little bit, and then I hear like, wait a minute. So to this day, he continues to break my balls that I try to drag him and everything. But fortunately, one of his best friends in the backseat, Mark Orsini, was like, you said you were all set. So
that's funny. Yeah.
So I got one. This actually isn't Blue Lodge. This is actually Knights Templar, and there's a brother. Love him. Dick Epler, fantastic ritualist, right? Older guy, unfortunately suffers from IBS, but we have, you know, we have the altar there, right? And they're in the Knights Templar. They're in the Knights Templar. They're at the altar. They're kneeling on the cross swords. They're taking their obligation. And as he's saying the obligation, all you hear is... And now it's taking all of the knights, everything in their power. Like, I'm turning purple. I'm standing here as a junior warden. And I'm
yeah, you got to pretend like you don't hear it, which is, like, impossible in that scenario.
Oh, but he didn't miss a beat in the ritual, right? Yeah. So, and I'm looking at the candidates, and their faces are just complete stoic, right? And I'm like, there's no way they don't hear this. Right? So, now I start laughing as to how the hell they're keeping their composure when this dude is just rattling off an obligation, but at the same time...
Brought his own percussion group.
Yeah.
His own percussion section.
One of the funniest things I ever freaking heard. And stunk, which made it even funnier.
Well, yeah.
Because now you're standing there, right? Nice. And you're right. You're
caught in the web of it.
And you're like... Oh, my God!
It's like walking through a spider web, and you're like, I can't get rid of it.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but...
Oh, yeah, you have.
I have?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Maybe not on the air.
No, I don't think I've done it on air before, but... you got any others? Any others?
None that really jumps out at me. I have more good memories than funny memories, although I'm sure there's some funny stuff out there, but it's just, you know, the whole camaraderie of the fraternity is what I enjoy.
How about Marty chumming the waters on one of those fishing trips there?
Yeah, one of the fishing trips that we did. I don't know if it was
fall out the boat?
No.
No, it was seasick.
He got seasick.
Oh, yeah.
But to his credit, you know, he didn't disrupt the boat. He kindly just leaned over to the side a little bit, and I'm like, is he falling in? Is he... I had no idea. And then
scraping barnacles off the side.
Then he comes in, he sits back down, and he kind of wipes his mouth a little bit. And I'm like, you all right? He's like, yeah, I'm good. But he was very discreet about it. He didn't make a big spectacle about it. But, yeah, that's one, yeah.
Blue Lodge Council, we always had the running joke about most worshipful now, Marshall Robinson was the actual Grand Lodge Marshal. So it was marshals, and every time that they would say, you know, because they call a roll call, we have, senior stewards, junior stewards, and the Masons would, you know, stand up, whatever your respective title was, and then they'd say Marshall, and Marshall would always stand up. He's a Marshal.
So. Roger.
Well, anyway, that's all I got. Got anything else you want to add, or anything else that we can think of? If not, we'll proceed to clues. All right. So, with that being said, I want to give two toasts.
Oh boy.
Charge them.
Oh no, I'm out of
two.
Oh, that's out of liquid. I know what one of them is. Is that good or you're going to cry again?
No, that's fine. And I actually made the joke before that we were going to have a Grand Lodge officer jump out of Ken's cake.
Yeah, that's not
Yeah. Just not this one over here.
Not
okay.
This one, no.
Well, you're a permanent member. You can jump out.
I forgot my two.
Seriously?
No.
We might have to give you a trampoline for you to jump out of it.
Seriously? You know, it used to be called a trampoline. Well, it used to be called a jumpoline until your mom got on there, right?
Got on it.
Yeah. Good one. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Facebook.
I made myself laugh on that one. Two, Right Worshipful Shane Dufresne, thank you for coming up here. Looking forward to you becoming Grandmaster, to which we will ramp up our shenanigans on this. But no, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I was going
to
say, not if you keep hanging around here, you won't.
No, we'll change the whole intro. It'll be like, welcome to the Freemasons. Probably we'll be all nice and like, you know, so he doesn't come up here and rip our ass apart.
He'll be holding the cue cards in the corner as we read off of him.
See this! But anyway, to Right Worshipful Shane Dufresne, thanks for coming up and playing with us. It's been a long time coming. Brother, right hand to arms.
To arms.
Ready.
Ready.
Aim.
Aim.
Fire. Good fire. Fire all. Together Brothers. Viva, viva, viva. And one more.
Uno más.
Tis a birthday boy.
Happy birthday. That went down a little sideways. Please don't sing.
I usually pay extra for that.
Do you?
And I think we'll let Right Worshipful Worshipful Brother Joe lead this one because he's due.
Yep. A what?
What?
Oh, I thought you called me a douche.
No, I didn't call you a douche. I said you're due to.
Oh, okay.
To.
Thank you.
You haven't done the toast yet. So.
All right. Brothers, right hand to arms.
To this arms. Is to happy birthday,
Ken. Happy birthday, Ken.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate 30, it. Right? 30?
50.
40. Right. Yeah.
I didn't know your processor could go that many cycles.
Yeah.
Brother, right hand to arms.
Due for an upgrade.
To arms. Ready.
Ready. Ready.
Aim. Fire good fire, fire all. Together, brothers.
Viva, viva, viva. All right, let's lock it up for the Freemasons podcast. I am Right Worshipful Brother George Mudry signing off.
Worshipful Brother Joe signing off.
Worshipful Brother Ken signing off.
Right Worshipful Shane Dufresne signing off.
Have a good one, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Konnichiwa, bitches.